You're listening to an episode of a Wondery Plus exclusive series. To continue listening, join Wondery Plus and enjoy ad-free listening to over 40,000 episodes, early access to your favorite podcasts, and more. Find Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
It's Thursday morning, January 24th, 1995, at a hotel in Miami's Blue Lagoon area. Jerry Rice, already the greatest wide receiver in NFL history, is furious. Super Bowl 24 is just 3 days away, but that didn't stop two dozen of his now groggy, hungover 49er teammates from ignoring last night's team curfew to go out partying all night. Jerry knows who the ringleader is, his 27-year-old rival-turned-teammate, Deion Sanders. The lockdown cornerback, who calls himself Primetime, has been driving around Miami all week in a black Lamborghini worth $250,000. Rice, the 49ers' legendary pass catcher, hates distractions. He's positive that they're the difference between good and great teams, especially ones trying to win a championship. And Deion is a walking, talking, dancing, high-stepping, end-zone celebrating distraction. Deion hasn't shut up since the team arrived in Miami. Really, Deion hasn't stopped talking since he arrived in the league 5 years ago. Most recently, Deion was talking to reporters at the Super Bowl all about his mountain of gold jewelry, enough to fill a treasure chest. About the mansions he built with swimming pools painted with his nickname Primetime on the bottom in gold letters. About his newly released album, obviously titled Primetime, and the promotional tour he took last offseason in a bus filled with strippers. While Deion was off doing who knows what on that bus, Jerry was doing what he does every offseason. Running hills, lifting weights, perfecting his pass routes over and over again. Doing all the unseen things that have helped him to overcome his limited natural speed to break nearly every receiving record in NFL history. The work has paid off. He's as much a legend for his workouts and preparation as he is for what he does in actual games. Now, he'd like to see his teammates match his effort no matter what they think of him. He's trying his best to lead by example. As he looks across the hotel lobby at this newer crop of teammates, he's starting to wonder if they really want it bad enough. Earlier in the playoffs, Jerry yelled at teammates who were wrestling in the locker room. He thought to himself, don't these guys care about acting like professionals? What if they get hurt? Why do I have to be the bad guy? Why do I have to be the only adult in the room? In Rice's previous two Super Bowl trips, the 49ers were led by veterans like Joe Montana, Roger Craig, and Ronnie Lott, three consummate pros who are all business. They know how to conduct themselves and follow the rules. Jerry's almost religion is following the idea that there's a right way and a wrong way to do things. The right way, the 49er way, means over-preparing, taking care of your body, and letting your play do the talking. and making curfew. Now, at the Hilton in Miami, Jerry stands in front of the team, fuming. He tears into his teammates. I am extremely disappointed in you guys. We're here to fucking win, not party. Some players feel ashamed and drop their heads like school children. As Dion listens to Jerry's speech, he thinks to himself, man, why is this guy so worked up? He and everyone running the Niners are just too stiff, too tight. They don't know how to have fun. Dion couldn't help but notice Jerry and the 49ers' stuffiness while playing against them the past 5 years, but now Dion is experiencing it up close as a teammate, who's now expected to be just as stiff. As Jerry drones on like a strict dad to all these grown men, ranting for well over 5 minutes, Dion is in his own world, wondering about the cranky legend yelling at everyone. He thinks, maybe that's part of the reason they lost these past 2 years to the Cowboys. They're younger and looser, and this kind of curfew nonsense would never even happen over there. Dion knows the Niners signed him to be an infusion of energy, and he's come through on that. After all, this is sports. This is entertainment. On a basic level, football's supposed to be fun even when it's serious business. What's the point if you're miserable all the time? Sure, working hard is part of the job, but Dion knows he does that too. If he didn't, he wouldn't have won the Defensive Player of the Year trophy or become the best cornerback in the game. Hell, best damn cornerback of all time, thinks Neon Dion. When Jerry's rant is finally over, he sits down feeling satisfied that he's made his point. Time to lock in, be disciplined, get our shit together. Then, Dion stands up. In his cool, casual manner, he says to the group, hey, everyone needs to just relax. We're gonna beat the Chargers by 30, so what's the difference? The words, just relax, enter Jerry's ears and echo around in his head. Just relax? Before the Super Bowl? Searing magma is now running through Rice's veins. Rice then jumps to his feet and a tense silence blankets the room. Moments later, Jerry and Dion are in each other's faces. A few teammates hurry over and separate the two Pro Bowlers, but it's not over. Before the two best to maybe ever play their positions try to win a Super Bowl as teammates, they're going to be in each other's faces again, making everyone around wonder, are these two legends about to actually throw punches?
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
From Wondery, I'm Dan Rubenstein, and this is Sports Wars. Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders are widely considered the best players ever at wide receiver and cornerback, respectively. Rice's 1,549 catches, 22,895 yards, and 197 touchdown catches are all NFL records, and by a wide margin. He's won multiple Super Bowls, was arguably the most physically durable and consistent offensive skill player ever, and is considered by many experts to be the best football player of all time, regardless of position. It's pretty good. Sanders, with his borderline Olympic sprinter speed, is the greatest shutdown cornerback football has ever known. His coverage erases entire sides of the field for the opposing team's offense. With his dazzling athleticism and fearless approach to shutting down opposing receivers and changing the game with his kick and punt returns, no player has ever been more electrifying on the field. On and off the gridiron, these two legends couldn't be more different. But from the 1980s through the 2000s, they constantly crossed each other's paths and became fierce rivals. On field battles, handshakes ignored, wars of words, and blowups in the media. For one brief, contentious, and entertaining season, they were forced to be teammates with a shared goal, a Super Bowl championship. This is episode one, Running Against the Dark. It's the summer of 1974 in Crawford, Mississippi, a remote, sleepy town of a few hundred people. There are no paved streets or stoplights in Crawford, an area surrounded by swamps. Jerry Rice, a shy 12-year-old, is balancing on a scaffold, catching bricks that his brothers are throwing at him. They're helping their father, Joe, a bricklayer who works from 5 a.m. until dusk every day. Actually, the hours aren't so bad. It's the Mississippi heat, which today is over 100 soggy degrees, that makes the work so exhausting. Joe Rice is large and intimidating, a 6-foot-tall, 285-pound rulemaker and enforcer with a death glare. Jerry's not having fun out here. He's afraid of doing a bad job. He doesn't want to disappoint Dad. Jerry is a good kid, but once in a while, he slips up, like the other night when he snuck over to a friend's house to watch the Jackson 5 on TV. When Big Joe found out, Jerry got a beating. It's a typical punishment in the Rice household. Usually, it's not even needed. The fear of letting his dad down generally keeps Jerry from doing anything even remotely wrong. Young Jerry is also a dreamer. Out on the scaffold, catching brick after brick, his mind can't help but to wander. We're not talking grand dreams of a fancy life, he just wishes he were running. Jerry is a natural loner, and when he's not in school or helping his dad, he runs everywhere in his only pair of sneakers. Down dusty roads and random paths from the town out to the country. The houses in this area are miles apart, and neighbors wave to Jerry as he sprints by. All across the countryside are wild horses, so Jerry runs after them too. He's imagining that very chase right now as he tries to keep his balance on the scaffold. The horses out in the country make fast, sharp turns. One of them, which has a black mane, is Jerry's favorite. Jerry actually named him Pete. And when Jerry is quick and anticipates Pete's moves well enough, he'll catch him and take Pete for a ride. Jerry's smiling now, just thinking about it. But Jerry snaps out of it. Another brick is flying his way. If he misses it, he'll have to answer to Joe. Jerry quickly refocuses and catches the brick with his long, soft fingers. The bricks should hurt, but for Jerry, they feel natural in his hands. After work, Jerry and his brothers head home, the place Joe built with his own rough hands. Jerry's mother made dinner for the whole family, so Jerry and his 7 siblings all sit around the table. They eat together this way every night as a family. Tomorrow, they'll head over to the Pine Grove Missionary Baptist Church together like they do every Sunday. And Jerry knows what his parents will repeat on their walk to church. Money is only necessary to buy food and clothes. It isn't everything. Other things are more important. Don't forget it. It's Sunday night in Jerry's bedroom, which he shares with 3 of his brothers. Outside, it's still hot, but a cool breeze and the sound of chirping crickets slip through an open window. Jerry is under the covers, flipping through Sports Illustrated. With the help of a flashlight, he reads about NFL wide receivers Lynn Swann and Drew Pearson. He looks at pictures of them in action, arms extended, catching perfect spirals with their fingertips. It helps to distract him from the throbbing pain in his legs and arms. That afternoon, after church, he was playing sandlot football with his brothers and neighbors. They were using a ball Jerry got for Christmas. Jerry's older brother Tom was playing too. Tom is, himself, a great player. Everyone in town thinks he might make the NFL one day. To impress Tom, Jerry dove to make a catch and landed in a thorn bush. But he popped out of the bush with scrapes, cuts, and the ball in his hands. So it was worth it. A few days later, with the scrapes and bruises still healing, Jerry finds himself alone after school with no ride home. The Rices live 10 miles away, and it's almost dark. His route takes him along the woods. Soon, it's pitch black outside. He's all alone. The area is just about silent. The smallest sounds scare him to death. So, he picks up his pace. It's 1974, and about 800 miles away in Fort Myers, Florida, a 7-year-old boy is also running and also scared. Like he does every night, little Deion Sanders is heading home from football practice in a crime-ridden area. A few miles away, his mother, Connie, is mopping the hospital floor where she works whenever she's not cleaning some rich person's home. She works almost nonstop so she can afford the clothes that Dion's wearing this very moment. So Deion has no ride, and his route on Henderson Avenue takes him past a huge, endless cemetery. It's now after dusk. Deion's heart races, and his mind wanders about what creatures might be lurking nearby. A few cars drive by, providing temporary light, which is a relief. But Deion knows that when he does arrive at home, he'll be all alone. Again. There's no babysitter. His mother prepared dinner for him, but he'll eat by himself. Just like how she arranges for him to go to church by himself, and how tomorrow morning his clothes will be laid out so he can go to school by himself. She'll be at work then, too. Deion thinks about his father, Daddy Buck, and wonders where he is. The thought brings him down even further. Buck, who dresses real flashy and used to be a dancer, left the family when Deion was very little. Deion's only real memory of him is hearing him argue and fight with his mom. Constantly. All Deion wanted was for them to be nice to each other. Buck is still somewhere close by, but Deion doesn't really know him well. He's never given Deion even a Christmas gift. Also, the 7-year-old is afraid of Daddy Buck. The cars pass. It's dark again. Thoughts return to the cemetery. Suddenly, Deion has an idea. He sees a car approaching and begins sprinting alongside it to stay in the light. Deion's always been creative and quick on his feet when he's in a jam or faces a problem. It's working. The car's lights are illuminating the path, making the graveyard a little less scary. Deion picks up speed. He's figured it out. He can avoid all the creatures of the cemetery by running against the dark. It's the fall of 1977 in Fort Myers. Deion, wearing football pads, is riding in a car with his mom. From their house, she drives him across the Edison Bridge, which spans a river that meets the Gulf of Mexico 20 miles downstream. On the other side, they arrive in North Fort Myers, the nicer, largely white part of town. Deion is so excited. He's been pestering his mom to sign him up for a big-time football league. Connie knows how important sports are to Deion and wants to give him the best chance to succeed, to reach his potential. She knows that the local city leagues he used to play in were disorganized and that sandlot ball won't make him any better. She also knows that Pop Warner leagues would push him to improve and help to keep him off the streets. So she signed him up. Deion is one of just 3 black kids on his new team, but he gets along with everyone. Deion sprints out of his mom's car toward the field. Part of it is that he's so happy that he doesn't have one of those migraine headaches he's been getting whenever he's stressed. Once the pain was so bad that a migraine made him miss a championship game. He felt like he was dying, but the worst part of all, his team lost and he felt responsible. The game begins with Deion playing running back. Deion is rail thin, but he's a blur. The first time the quarterback hands him the ball, Deion darts to the outside and outruns the entire defense for an easy touchdown. Once in the end zone, he raises his arms high and sways his knees back and forth toward each other. Just about everyone there recognizes it. It's the Funky Chicken Dance, the celebration that Billy White Shoes Johnson from the Houston Oilers has made famous. More and more, his coaches, teammates, and the parents in attendance are seeing a lot of the Funky Chicken. He's scoring touchdowns pretty much every time he touches the ball. Deion's team wins in a blowout. Thanks largely to Deion, it becomes the norm. After one game in North Fort Myers, a mother of one of the cheerleaders invites everyone back to their house for ice cream. The house is enormous. Deion's never seen anything like it. Whoa! A blown away Deion thinks to himself, I had no idea people live like this. Hey, Deion, one teammate says, what do your parents do? My dad's a lawyer. Deion knows that these other parents aren't like his. They're lawyers, doctors, one is even the chief of police. Deion feels ashamed. He's afraid to tell the truth. What is he going to say? That his mom cleans hospitals? So he makes something up. My mom's a nurse, Deion tells them. Afterward, Deion is back at home with his mom. He raves about the house he saw, tells her you could put our whole house inside theirs and still have room for the front yard. Being 100% genuine, with complete earnestness, he looks her in the eye. Mama, he says, someday I'm gonna be rich and I'm gonna buy you a big house like that and you'll never, ever have to work again.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
It's the fall of 1978, outside Crawford, Mississippi. Jerry Rice, a sophomore at Moore High School, is sitting bored in math class. The school is tiny, about 25 students per grade, and his class is inside a trailer. Jerry's mind starts to drift off. He knows this. He does not want to stay in Crawford and lay bricks his entire life. School life and classes don't interest him. Today, he's already had shop class, which is one of the only ones he looks forward to. Honestly, he thinks, I'd rather be running. So, he decides to cut class. In between periods, he waits for just the right moment and slips out the school's exit. As Jerry leaves the school grounds, he glances back and sees the principal. The two make brief eye contact, then Jerry takes off sprinting. He hears a voice shouting at him to stop. Hopefully, the principal didn't recognize me, he thinks. Well, he thinks wrong. When Jerry returns to school the next day, he gets called into the office. The principal whacks Jerry 5 times with a leather strap. Then, though, the principal abruptly shifts out of disciplinarian mode. He does a quick 180 and now is assuming the role of mentor as he sits at his desk. You sure can run, he tells Jerry. Have you ever considered going out for football? The principal, like everyone else in town, knows that Jerry's older brother, Tom, was a big deal star. But Jerry didn't try out for the freshman team because his mom thought he was too shy, not aggressive enough. She told Jerry he'd get hurt. But now the principal is forcing Jerry to meet with the head football coach. The coach, well aware of the Rice football pedigree, convinces Jerry to try out. It's the fall of 1980. Jerry Rice is a senior wide receiver lined up and ready for a snap on the Moore High School dirt football field. Jerry approaches his football training the way he caught bricks, with intensity and motivated by a fear of failure. He awaits the snap. Joe isn't in the crowd watching. He's working. But something deep inside of Jerry is still afraid of failing him anyway. The ball is snapped. Jerry runs a fly pattern, looks up, and sees the ball drop out of the sky. He watches it all the way into his big soft hands and easily runs into the end zone. It's nothing new, actually. It's one of 80 receptions he's pulled down and 35 touchdowns he scores this season. For the second year in a row, he's an all-state selection. Jerry then turns and looks into the small, cheering crowd. He notices a stranger among them. The man's not cheering, and he's focused on Jerry with a keen eye. After the game, students and teachers approach Jerry and tell him, "Great job!" Then the stranger appears. He introduces himself and firmly shakes Jerry's hand, squeezing it almost like he was inspecting each digit of his long fingers. He says, "Nice to meet you, Jerry. I'm a coach over at Mississippi Valley State University." Mississippi Valley State is a small, historically black, Division I AA school, a full rung below college football's top level. Jerry's been receiving interest from other colleges, too, finding some recruiting letters in his home's mailbox. But Crawford is so out of the way that, until now, no one had bothered to make the trip to watch him in person. Jerry is actually intrigued by playing at Mississippi Valley because of its offense. It's a pass-oriented, run-and-shoot system that Jerry knows he could thrive in. It seems like the kind of program that just might help him to get out of Mississippi one day. But Jerry quickly stops himself. He thinks about his older brother, Tom. Tom was a standout offensive lineman at Jackson State. He was an NFL prospect on his way out of Mississippi for good. He had big dreams and was saddled with high expectations. Tom even promised to buy their parents a new house with his hypothetical NFL money. But he was never drafted and returned home to Crawford. Turns out, football wasn't his ticket after all. Later that night, after the crowds have all gone home and with the Mississippi countryside shrouded in darkness, Tom Rice firmly grasps Jerry's shoulder and looks him dead in the eye. He tells him, "I'm passing the torch, little brother. Now it's up to you. You can make it out. I know it." It's the fall of 1982. Deion Sanders is sitting in a big, clean classroom at North Fort Myers High School, surrounded by white kids. Deion, who's still a string bean and sporting Jerry curls, is furiously writing in his notebook. It's English class, which is his favorite. He's good at writing stories that get the classroom's attention. Funny, wild, brazen stories they haven't heard from a kid like him before. Then the bell rings and Deion bolts out of the building to head to football practice, his favorite part of the day. After practice, Deion jumps in a pickup truck with some teammates to get a ride home. They ask him if he wants to smoke a joint. Deion thinks it over. He knows his mom would kill him if she smelled it, but he could talk his way around that. He saw how drugs destroyed his father, Daddy Buck. He sees what booze is doing now to his mom's new husband, who's nice and quiet, but an alcoholic. And he also sees how many kids from his neighborhood are winding up in jail. With his obvious speed and talent, Deion doesn't want to mess up his future. Just recently on the school track, Deion casually beat the high school track team's fastest sprinters, two seniors, in the 100-meter dash. So Deion declines the invitation to smoke pot. He'd promised his mom he'd be rich after all. This stuff, as he looks at the joint, hasn't helped anyone he knows do that. It's fall 1984, 2 years later. Deion is a senior three-sport star at North Fort Myers High School. He's an all-state football player, but that's only part of the year. He's also all-state in basketball. He averages 24 points a game as a lightning-fast, high-leaping point guard. And with his speed and superior hand-eye coordination, he's becoming an excellent baseball player as well. Today, though, he's playing quarterback, running an option offense, which basically means that every single play ends with him doing something special, running or making a great decision to pitch it to a running back. Wearing a red jersey, he takes a snap from under center, fakes a handoff to his fullback, and thinks, oh yeah, I'm taking this one the distance. Dion vanishes out of a scrum of would-be tacklers and into the open field. He's gone for six. A few plays later, he's playing safety on the other side of the ball, defense. One play, the opposing quarterback spots a wide-open receiver deep and launches the ball downfield. That open receiver isn't open for long. Dion closes in on the pass, picks it off, and runs it all the way back the other direction, weaving past the other team for a touchdown, and punctuates it all by what else? Dancing in the end zone. Not too long after putting on that two-way football show, Dion begins to think about his future. He has options in both football and baseball. In fact, the Kansas City Royals recently drafted Dion and offered him a $75,000 signing bonus to play professional baseball. It's very tempting, given the family's circumstances. He's also been getting recruiting letters from dozens of schools to play football. The letters sit in massive piles at home. Scholarship offers from major Division I colleges like Georgia, Miami, and Florida State. These are big deal offers. Dion now faces a big decision. Take the money and go pro in baseball, or go to college to play football and wait for the money that should one day come in the NFL. After some thought, he decides. He just can't quit football, his best and favorite sport. Dion knows how good he can be. He believes in himself. While sitting at home, he turns to his mother. Mama, he tells her, I think I'm going to school. It's that same autumn of 1984 in Itabena, Mississippi. 4 years have passed since Jerry was first approached by that college scout, and now he's a senior at Mississippi Valley State. Wearing an outdated forest green uniform, he jogs onto the dirt field and lines up wide. The band in this tiny stadium is playing enthusiastically, but on old, rickety instruments. Jerry swats away hordes of mosquitoes with his large, strong, long-fingered hands. These hands have helped him to catch over 300 passes, about 50 of them, for touchdowns since arriving at Mississippi Valley State. This season, he will catch 112 passes for 1,845 yards, both best in the nation. He's made diving catches, leaping grabs, shoestring catches. He's caught deep balls and balls thrown over the middle. He's caught passes while double-teamed, hell, triple-teamed. It hasn't mattered. His teammates nickname him World because there are no passes on earth he can't haul in. As his head coach puts it, Jerry could catch a BB on a dead run at night. On the sideline, that coach, Archie Gunslinger Cooley, looks on from underneath the brim of his cowboy hat. He's seen Jerry improve each year playing in his no-huddle, run-and-shoot offense. He knows just how much work Jerry has put in well before practices and long after everyone has gone home. Thanks to Jerry and his quarterback, Willie Totten, the Mississippi Valley State Delta Devils are the most explosive offense in the nation. They're scoring a ridiculous 58 points a game. People call their explosive air attack the Satellite Express. Jerry's teammates, mostly poor and from sharecropping families, look up to Jerry as a leader. And Jerry isn't afraid to speak up to keep his guys motivated during the long, long bus rides they're forced to take as the program can't afford to fly. Whenever Rice wants to speak, his teammates shout, "World talking, listen up!" It's October 19th, 1985 in Tallahassee, Florida. Tens of thousands of fans are bracing the rain and passing through the enormous brick entrance at Florida State's Doak Campbell Stadium to see the Seminoles take on visiting Tulsa. Inside, the fans form an endless sea of garnet and gold. The band plays as 53,500 fans chant and perform the Florida State Tomahawk Chop. Early on, Tulsa moves the ball to the Seminole 4-yard line. On the far left side of the field, Florida State's freshman cornerback, Deion Sanders, who's now 5'11 and 169 pounds, is closely guarding his man. From the sideline, Bobby Bowden, the Seminoles' Hall of Fame head coach, looks on. He knows it's unusual for a freshman to start, but this is no ordinary freshman. The Tulsa QB sees a receiver open and thinks he can take advantage of Deion, the inexperienced freshman. Big mistake. He runs the interception back 100 yards, the entire field, for a touchdown. It's the longest interception return in Florida State history. It's now a year later, in the fall of 1986, in a dorm room in Tallahassee. Deion is again pondering his future. A sophomore now, Deion's already being talked about as one of the best cornerbacks in the country. A friend walks in and hands Deion the sports section of a newspaper. Inside, there's a list of the NFL's highest paid players. Deion notices they have something in common. They're all quarterbacks and running backs. None of them are cornerbacks. This poses a new dilemma for Deion. He hasn't forgotten the promise he made to his mom back when he was a kid that he'd buy her a mansion one day, and that he'd become so rich that she'd never have to work again. But cornerbacks don't make big money. He thinks about it some more. Then he comes to an epiphany. To be rich, I need to be more than an athlete. I need to be bigger than sports, bigger than just an athlete, bigger than just a guy who plays. I need to be a showman. I'll create an exaggerated version of myself. It'll be a caricature. He'll be a cocky, outspoken player with an entertainer's flair. This guy's name? That's easy. Primetime. Smiling at his realization and new plan, Deion flips the sports page. He sees a big action shot of a new NFL star, a wide receiver. There's a big spread about how the receiver has taken the league by storm, putting up huge numbers for the San Francisco 49ers. His name? Jerry Rice. From Wondery, this has been Sports Wars. On the next episode, Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders both become superstars on the national stage and develop into all-time greats at their positions. And when they wind up in the same NFL division, a historic rivalry begins. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Sports Wars. If you did, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening to this right now. If you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast. You'll find the episode notes and some offers from our sponsors. By supporting our sponsors, you help us offer you the show for free. If you like what you've heard, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends how to subscribe. Another way to support us is to answer a short survey at wondery.com/survey and tell us what Sports Wars stories you'd like to hear. And a quick note about the conversations you've been hearing. We can't know exactly what was said, but this dialogue is based on our best research. And we use many sources for our stories, including autobiographies, articles from Sports Illustrated, The New York Times, ESPN.com, and more. I'm your host, Dan Rubenstein. I also co-host a college football podcast called The Solid Verbal, with 3 episodes dropping each week during the season. Louis Lazar wrote this story, edited by Caleb Bissinger. Produced by Yaron Descalo and Gabe Goodwin. Sound design by Ryan Sack. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman, Marshall Louie, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called 6 Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out 6 pop culture themed trophies for 6 basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make 6 Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow 6 Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.